Hello everybody and welcome back to the Irish Farmers Journal Young Stock Podcast, a podcast by young journalists for young listeners and readers of the Irish Farmers Journal. I'm Rachel Donovan, your host this week, and I've been chatting to multiple Grade 1 and Cheltenham Festival winning jockey Michael O'Sullivan. The Cork native grew up on a dairy farm in Lumbertstown near Mallow in County Cork and studied ag science in UCD before fully dedicating his career to becoming a professional jockey. The 24-year-old rode two winners on the first day of the Cheltenham Festival last year, and just this month he had his second ride in the Angel Grand National, where he got to four from home before being unseated. We chat about life as a jockey, weight and dieting, the highs and lows, as well as a bit about his farm at home in Cork. Also, we have a quick fire round at the end, which is always worth sticking around for, and it may or may not include a tip for a horse. This podcast is brought to you in association with Lightsource BP, and we'll hear from them now before getting into the interview with Michael.
Are you eager to unlock untapped potential and create more income from your land? Have you been exploring ways of diversifying your farming business? Do you want to become a key player in the solution to the climate crisis? Why not consider leasing your land for solar with Lightsource BP? A solar lease offers Irish farmers a predictable long-term revenue stream, index-linked to keep up with inflation, and the best part is that you'll still be able to use the land for farming if you want to. Lightsource BP has a long history of developing solar in Ireland. We've been on the island for a decade and have developed hundreds of megawatts of renewable energy projects. Speak to our local teams to find out how a Lightsource BP solar lease could benefit your farming business today by visiting www.lightsourcebp.com/IE and clicking Partner with Us.
Thanks for coming on the Young Stock Podcast, Michael. You're very welcome.
No problem, Rachel. Thanks very much for having me on.
Those who know you from racing circles might not be aware that you come from a dairy farm. While that's what the listeners of this podcast will be mainly interested in, the success you've had to date as a national hunt jockey is definitely worth delving into as well, and the trials and tribulations of the profession. As you well know, it's not an easy job. Just to get started, and before we get into the racing side of things, tell us firstly, Michael, where you grew up, a little bit about the farm at home. You come from a dairy farm.
That's right. Yeah, I grew up just outside Mallow in North Cork, in Lumbertstown. Grew up on a farm. My father milks about 160 dairy cows, and we've cattle as well. He does a bit of contracting on the side, and my uncle Eugene trains horses, mainly pint to pinters. So, grew up surrounded by animals and work and everything involved with that at home. With a great upbringing and. Yeah, that's where it all started, I suppose. I didn't have much interest in the farming side of things in the early doors. That kind of developed a small bit as I got older, still developing it. But the horses kind of always took centre stage. And I started riding ponies and hunting and pony club and all that, eventing and show jumping, kind of from the age of 9 and 10 up along. And I was still in school and all that. And when I was old enough to get my license, I got my license, started pint to pinting, and that's kind of where it all kicked off from there. I had a great grounding, like most other people in our game, but that's where it all kicked off.
And Michael, you studied ag science in UCD, so there's obviously brains in there. Did you feel a pressure, Michael? Obviously, did you know you wanted to be a jockey? Was there pressure there, maybe from society, that you have to do your leaving cert, you have to go to college and do something? Like, did you always kind of know you were going to be a jockey, or was ag science something you really wanted to have done, or maybe something you'll use in the future?
Yeah, to answer your question, definitely pressure there. I think that's the way things have gone for the better. You know, it's very important to get an education, but especially my family, they'd all be sticklers for education, my father and mother, my aunts and uncles and grandmother and everyone. So that was always, I was always going to be made to do that. And I suppose I didn't mind it really. I was able to ride away as an amateur all along, pint to pinting and bumpers and amateur races and stuff like that. But I was always put pressure on to do well in school, and I did a decent enough leaving cert, probably could have done better. But I suppose when I finished my leaving cert, I was at a crossroads. I was probably leaning towards taking a year out and focusing on the race, and my family were pushing me to, to go to college, and especially when I did an okay leaving cert, that they really pushed me, and I'm glad they did, because I'd say if I took a year out and went racing, I'd never have come back. And I didn't know what to do when I did my leaving cert. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do in college. But I was decent enough with science and things like that, and the farm at home, ag science, it just seemed the right fit. I just stuck it down for UCD, and without really thinking about it, it was all, a bit of a whim, but it worked out well. And I had 4 good years in college, and I was able to mix it with the racing as well, and I wouldn't change it anyway.
And were you using college as an opportunity to ride out in the mornings? Did you ride out before college, or were you living the full college life?
I tried my best to mix it, I suppose with the timetable and stuff, I was able to ride out maybe one day a week, one morning a week, and then at the weekends I'd be at home racing or riding out and working basically. So, I was able to mix it. Like, it was hard maybe with exams and stuff if I had to go racing, but to be fair, I was able to balance it quite well, and no, it worked out well for finish anyway. I got the degree.
Do you see yourself using it, Michael, into the future, or do you think maybe, obviously, a career as a jockey is not going to last forever? It's not for anyone in that business. Do you see yourself maybe using your degree, come back to the dairy farm at home, or do you see yourself maybe moving towards the training side of things, or what do you see yourself doing?
Yeah, I'd like to think I will definitely use it. Obviously, it's handy. I got the green cert out of it. I did animal science, specialised in that, and it's handy with the farm at home that I have that done anyway. And obviously, as you said, racing won't last forever. I suppose if you're the way things are looking at the minute, you're retiring at 40 from race riding, all being well, please God. So yeah, I definitely like to think I'd use it. What I'll use it at, I'm not so sure. Obviously, there's a farm at home. I have one older brother. He's not too keen on the cows either. He's riding as well. So I think as I get older, I have more of appreciation for that as well. So I'd might go farm, and we'll see how we get on. I'm not sure yet. We'll focus on the racing for the time being. But if opportunities are always down the line to use my degree with anything related to agriculture industry, or if I could link the two, that'd be great. So to answer your question, I'd like to think so.
Yeah, so you won't cast the cows aside just yet. Not knowing those milk checks coming in every month. At the minute, the milk prices are rising, so you never know. You could be swayed to that side of things. Michael, obviously, you're jump jockey, dangerous job. You obviously love it. Anyone who does it, they do seem to love it. Just give us a flavour of maybe your week. Do you ride out for different trainers? Is it one trainer you stick with? Obviously, there's racing involved in those weeks as well. And you rode in the Grand National this month. I know you came off four to go. You got around it safely last year. Just tell us, give us a flavour about what your week is like, and if there's racing, how does that work out?
It's a way of life, really. It's all my week would, obviously I'm kind of stable jockey to Barry Connell, so I'm in with him 3 mornings a week, and then I go into Willie Mullins's 2 mornings a week, or maybe three, depending on the week. And then on a Monday or a Sunday, I try getting into a few of the smaller trainers. It's very important that the small men keep you going. So, at the minute, it's very tight in Ireland. There's no real spare rides to be got. It's a very tight weigh-room. You kind of have to work for what you get, and it's very competitive at the minute. Obviously, the bigger yards like William Mullins and Gordon Elliott are kind of controlling things, so it's hard to get outside ones other than that. But as you said, Willie's been good to me. I rode it for him in the Grand National the last couple of years. He had a good spin this year for a long ways, but he just got tired then and I fell off him. But that's all part of it. Like last year, obviously I turned professional once I got my degree in September, and it kicked off, and I had a great season last year and lost my weight allowance, my claim. So this year is kind of a bit tougher. You just kind of had to find your feet, and you're on a level playing field with, the likes of Paul Townend and Rachel Blackmore. So from my first year at that, it's been going okay. The start of the year was great, and this it's kind of slowing down now, but looking forward to Punchestown at the end of the season, and hopefully we get a few winners there.
Yeah, and just getting back to the Grand National, Michael, it's possibly the biggest test in a national hunt jockey's career. What is it like? What's that feeling when you're at the start and you're just waiting to take off? Describe it for us.
It's special. Like I got a great even last week. I got a great spin around. I actually made the running for a lot of it, and that's an amazing feeling. And my horse was jumping fence to fence, but it's the build up beforehand. You're sitting around all day waiting for it, and everyone's waiting for it. The crowd in Liverpool it's an unbelievable atmosphere in Aintree compared to Cheltenham. It's a lot more relaxed and a lot more enjoyable, and the people at Liverpool, they're really friendly, and they really embrace it. They love it, and they're very proud of their race and their city. So it's an amazing weekend, and it's very enjoyable. But the race itself, there's a serious buzz around, and it's probably the only race that you go out in where we're all wishing each other the best of luck. Obviously, it's changed in recent years, but it's still a really hard test for horse and jockey. But yeah, it's some buzz, like going down over them fences. It's a bit different to your normal day's race, and you get a real thrill out of it. So it's yeah, it's a special race, and it's one you'd love to look to win at some stage.
I'm sure that's on the bucket list for you, Michael. I'm sure there'll be lots of listeners interested in what is the diet of a jockey like? Probably listeners here maybe on a tractor, and they're eating away, drinking cans of Coke, and they can eat what they like. They're in for Mammy's dinner at 1 o'clock. Don't necessarily have to watch their weight. They're obviously maybe active in what they do, but as a jockey, it's really tough, isn't it? And what height are you? Is your height an issue?
I'm 6'1", which would be quite tall, but I'm lucky in that I'm quite light. I've never struggled with my weight. Obviously, I mind it. I keep fit and go to the gym as much as I can and watch what I eat. But I'm lucky in that I'm not very pressurized, or it's not something that I struggle with really. A lot of lads would. I suppose we're getting a lot more professional now. We've dietitians or physios or personal trainers and all that available to us now, which wouldn't have been the case even a few years ago. You know, so it's all moving in the right way. And becoming more professional, but I suppose for lads that would struggle with it, you know, it's day to day. You kind of eat little and often, but it's just you just get used to it and you get into routine of it. That's the most important thing. Look, in the last year since COVID, we lost the saunas at the races, which have kind of made things a lot harder for lads and girls to sweat and lose a few pounds before racing. I suppose the bad side you see of it now is that, you know, people are coming racing dehydrated for 24 hours or hungry, and you'd be sweating in the car, stuff like that, which isn't the healthiest way of doing it. But since COVID, the saunas have gone, so that's kind of put a lot more pressure on lads as well to lose that extra couple of pounds before a race. So it might be for the better, though. You know, people are taking more, putting more attention on their diet now. Everyone's kind of unique, but luckily enough for me, I'm quite light, and it's not something I have to worry about too much.
Yeah, the saunas was a big thing. My brother is a jockey as well. If you had a few pounds to lose, just to explain maybe for our listeners, the sauna was a place where you'd go in and you could lose a pound or two fairly quickly.
Well, you can argue both sides with 50-50. If you go to the Scandinavian countries, they tell you saunas are a great thing and they're very healthy. Over here, I suppose it's just the way you use them. And maybe some people are abusing them and using them the wrong way, but I don't see any harm in going racing and losing a couple of pounds in the sauna. And it makes life easier. It saves you maybe from having to get a bath the night before and lose it and then be kind of, you know, under the weather all day rather than feeling 100% and going out and just losing your pound before the race. Whereas, you know, you see lads now that, as I said, they're sweating in the cars on the way to the races, and that can't be good, you know. There'll be an accident at some stage, so it's a tricky one. Saunas are still in the race courses, so maybe we'll see them back at some stage, but they're not there at the minute.
If this was anyone else bar a jockey, it would be a very insulting question to ask you what your weight is.
Comfortably around 10 stone every day, so I've no problem eating food at the minute anyway, so hopefully the metabolism keeps going.
For 6'1", that's not bad going. Michael, just getting back to the highs and lows of racing, obviously you have some great days, and Cheltenham last year I think was particularly good festival for you. But I suppose there are some lows too, and there are some weeks where you mightn't have as many rides as you'd like. How do you manage that? Yeah, how do you kind of go from those highs to those lows?
Physically, obviously, it's quite tough. You mentioned Cheltenham last year, and a few weeks later I broke my collarbone. So there's all that sides of it. You know, you do get your injuries. But mentally is huge as well, and that's something that comes with experience, and I'm getting better at all the time. The more experience, the easier it is to deal with it. You just have to kind of moderate yourself, not to get too high or too low, and you know, if you can get a couple of big days, they make up for all the lesser ones and all the hard work. But yeah, I suppose it's an individual sport rather than a team sport. You're on your own and you have to deal with all these pressures yourself. And as you said, when things aren't going well, it is tricky. You know, you can get quite low if you let yourself. You know, you've no one really to reach out to or to help you. And it's it's quite old fashioned game in that sense. It's, you know, you can be lost very easily, and people forget about you very easily. So yeah, it's tough mentally, and as I said, it just comes with experience. You have to moderate yourself. The bigger days make up for it, but you know, I suppose 95% of the time you're losing, and 5% of the time you're winning. So it's tough that way, but you know, as you get older, you definitely get better at it.
And Michael, you touched on injuries there. How have you fared out in that department? Have you been lucky or unlucky? I suppose obviously every jockey is lucky to live another day, but how have you fared out, I suppose, overall?
I've probably had my fair share for my age. I've been lucky in that I haven't done anything too serious, but I suppose my collarbones are the main one. I've two plates in both my collarbones now. So I've done one 3 times and the other one twice. And especially my left one is quite messy now. I have a big plate in it. The last surgery was very complicated. So that's going to be a tricky one if it happens to go again. Touch wood, it won't, but more than likely will at some stage. So they're the main ones. I've crushed my nose. I've had a few surgeries on that and my wrist, and they're the main ones. But I suppose I'm 24. I've had my fair share, but lucky in the sense that it's not been too serious, you know.
Good, not too bad. You don't have a list as long as Ruby Walsh yet, anyway. I think he's
Not yet, and I
probably
hope I'll get that fair.
one of the more unlucky jockeys in his career. Just looking at the racing industry as a whole, Michael, what do you see as the biggest challenges? Now, this could be got to do with breeding, training as a jockey. What do you see as some of the big challenges that face the industry?
Number of challenges, I suppose. It's only kind of the top 5% of people at the top that are making a very good living out of it, and everyone else is just making a living. The main one for me at the minute, looking around the place, is staff. Very, very hard to get staff now to work in yards and to ride out or to muck out or just do the yard duties. It's something everyone is struggling with, you know. I suppose it's just the way the world has gone, really. There's not the people there anymore to do it. So that's the main challenge, yeah, at the minute.
And what do you think needs to be done to entice people into these jobs? Is it more pay? Is it better working conditions? Is it more work-life balance? Or what do you think it is?
Yeah, a bit of everything. The pay is a big one. The top yards are able to afford to give a very nice wage or a solid wage, whereas as the middle of the road trainers or the smaller trainers, you know, they find it hard to. They don't have the money basically to be paying a very high wage. I suppose the working conditions need to be developed as well. I suppose it's just the way it is. Like even on farms now, it's the same. No one really wants to do the dirty work anymore, which is just the way it is. But it's hard to know what the best thing to do is. I suppose maybe if you could get more funding for a couple of the smaller trainers to up their wages, it would be a big help.
It's probably the same in the farming industry as well. It's very hard to get those people to do the dirty jobs, but
See it at home with my father as well. You know, he's 160 cows and he's for the large part doing it all on his own. He was lucky now with calving this year. He'd a lad came up from Clonakilty from the farming college, but other than that, you know, he's no one. So it's a big struggle, I think, in a lot of like if you go with the agriculture industry as a whole, it's hard to find people to do that manual labour, yeah.
calving is a really tough time on farmers. You know, it's all condensed into this shorter calving season, and it's hard on one man to do it on his own.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how he does it. It's very hard, and it's 24/7, 365. So it's yeah, it's I don't know what the answer for it is or the solution for it is, but things are going to have to be made easier for farmers, especially because it's not plausible to be working like that for the rest of your life, you know.
Yeah, not too enticing either for the younger generation, I suppose, to get involved.
You were asking me earlier, like, and that's the drawback of it, you know. If you go farming, you're stuck there, and you know that doesn't seem too appealing for too many for young people, I don't think.
No, it doesn't. So it has its pros and cons, but that is definitely a big con of dairy farming. Just getting back to racing again, Michael, last question of the day before we get to our quick fire round. What day in racing or race or whatever brought you, I suppose, your happiest memory? I suppose what was your biggest highlight?
I suppose last season was my first season as professional and I won 3 grade ones. So any of them days were really good. Obviously, Cheltenham, the first day of Cheltenham to have a double. Yeah, that had to be my best day. That was really special, obviously. You know, Cheltenham, the first race is huge, like 70,000 people there watching, and everyone at home as well. You know, for my first ride as a professional in Cheltenham to be a grade one and then to win it, and you know, to be Paul Town and William Mullins, and just everything about it was amazing and special. And suppose at the time it's hard to appreciate it all. And you go back there this year and you're trying for another winner, and it's so hard. Like, I was so lucky for it to work out the way it did. You know, that was a special day, and my family were there and everything. So yeah, it was brilliant. Dublin Racing Festival was probably the second one. I won a grade one there last year as well in Leopardstown, and I got a great kick out of that at home, and there was great atmosphere in Leopardstown that day and big crowd. And yeah, no, that was good.
Cheltenham is the big spot everyone wants to win at, but it's nice to win at home too and more locally.
Yeah, exactly. And that Dublin Racing Festival, like a couple of days in February in Leopardstown, is getting bigger and bigger every year. And even this year, there was a massive crowd there and really good racing. And yeah, I suppose from living over the road in Goatstown in my time in UCD, it was nice to ride a big winner there, and you know, plenty of friends and family. So yeah, I got a good kick out of that.
And Michael, we're going to get stuck into the quickfire round. The Cheltenham Festival or the Punchestown Festival?
Or Cheltenham.
Barry's or Lyons?
Barry's.
Chicken roll or a breakfast roll?
Chicken roll.
Okay. Foot and turf or picking stones?
Picking stones.
Favourite racetrack?
Fairy House.
And your favourite horse ever?
Marine National.
Favourite weigh room colleague?
That's so fun. Ben Harvey.
What's the lightest weight you can do? I know you said you're around 10 stone, but what's your lightest?
Depends what I'm riding. 9 stone 12.
And lastly, and most importantly, give us a tip for a horse that you'll be riding over the next while and that has a chance, something that's coming down the track.
So we talk about Punchestown. Horse I ride called Ennis Scary. It's going for a handicap chase. I was just thinking he'd go close. And I sat on a horse in William Mullins this morning. I might go for a bumper called Runcock. He's owned by Simon Muneer. He's a nice young horse that hasn't ran yet. Keep an eye on him.
Okay, we'll hold you to those two. So, Michael, thanks a million. And thanks for coming on the Young Stock Podcast.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me, Rachel.
Well, folks, that's it for this week's episode on the Young Stock Podcast. Thanks to Michael O'Sullivan for joining us, and thanks again to our sponsor, Lightsource BP. Till next time, thanks for listening.
We're currently looking for young people across Ireland to interview on the podcast. If you know someone who's under the age of 35 that has an interesting story, career, or experience that you want to share, then send on their name and get in touch with the Young Farmers Journal team. We want to give a voice to young people across rural Ireland. What issues are currently bothering you? Get in touch by emailing youngstock@farmersjournal.ie or send us a WhatsApp voice note to 086 83 66465.